Good morning, good day, and good evening. Welcome back to the show. I'm, as always, your host, Brody Robertson, and today we have David Edmondson back on the show. You might remember him from the previous episode. We're talking about the, like, desktop recovery stuff last time, weren't we? I feel like that's what it
was. And Wayland in general, yeah. I joined the show specifically to try and make you teach you how to pronounce the word Quinn correctly. And given that's failed, I'll come back, and we'll keep coming back until it's landed.
Mm. Yeah, I'll keep saying K-Win.
K-Win! QT! And there's another one in your last video that you kept getting wrong. Feature request. You kept pronouncing it as bug.
That's just Australian. You can't get rid of that
one. Yeah, so that's been an Australian thing of getting that one wrong.
Yeah, no, that one's not going to change. Like, my accent's cleaned up quite a bit when I'm on camera. I do notice it, especially when I'm just talking to, like, regular people. The Australian thing is where you just slur all of the syllables together. You just delete as many syllables as possible, and people still know basically what you're saying.
Fortunately, I don't have an accent. That's how being English works. Everybody else does.
Yeah, actually. Look, the Americans think they don't have accents, so I'll let you have that one as well.
Yeah, wrong.
They are definitely very wrong. But we're not here to laugh at the Americans. That can be for another episode. So, I guess, do you want to get into, like, the main thing with the global themes, or do you want to talk about general plasma stuff first? Because I'm happy to go either way.
Start on something positive before you start bringing everybody down.
I'll be fair. I think the way global themes have been handled actually has been really good. There's been a couple of people I've seen being kind of pedantic about the certain things with the store.
It sounds like we're talking about global themes. Let's go into global
themes. We can do that,
themes.
Yeah, sure. Let's go
global themes. Do you want to give a recap of what happened from your perspective?
Okay, sure. So the way I understand it is global themes aren't really themes. Global themes are a sort of general package for styling and modifying Plasma, which include things like Plasma themes, icon themes, wallpapers, all of which are generally safe, and assuming someone doesn't, like, bundle something weird with it, which my understanding is they can with Pling. That's what I heard from Nate, at least.
Yeah, so back up why we're talking about this.
Yeah.
A user installed a global theme, or, from my perspective, an add-on, from the KD store, which is a third-party website-ish, but it's under KDE brand.
Yeah, we'll talk about that as well.
Operated by Pling. And it got some content. It wasn't designed to be malicious, and I don't want to go too much into specifics of calling a particular author out, but...
No, from my understanding, it was just a dev who used a Plasma 5 plasmoid. He didn't realize that in certain situations it can lead to an empty string set. It doesn't seem like it's malicious. Yeah.
No, but a user's home directory got lost, which is pretty bad. Things could be worse. I mean, it could be a more security issue, but... brings up the conversation there about... Well, hold on, what's happening with the KDE store and content in it? Mm-hmm. And this isn't a new topic. We've been talking for years about how the stuff in the store is not sandboxed. In fact, all through December and January, mm-hmm. we had one of these security researchers coming up to us and saying, oh, plasmoids can run arbitrary code. And our response, you know, and I was one of these people, was like, well, yeah, we know. Here's API for it. There's documentation of how to do exactly this.
My understanding, correct me if I'm wrong here, my understanding is internally, it's been fully aware that this is how it's worked for a long time. It's just not being communicated to the public in the most clear way.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you're on the inside, you just have this hat of, oh, this is how it works. That's always how it works.
Right.
And with global themes especially, we've had this situation where it started off as being about bundling code for your lock screen and all these other very core system things. And it was like, whoa, that's as core as it gets. It's clearly clearly, designed of needs to come from trusted sources, therefore it doesn't matter if anything else happens. And then more and more stuff got powered in and powered in and powered in and powered in.
Right.
And that was fine. But because more stuff got powered in, that messaging changed on top. It was like, oh, well, this is a convenient way to set up all of my applets in the way I want them out of the box. And there was a little UI tool to take your configuration and save it into a global theme so you can get a new laptop and restore everything back to how it was. So it's a very conscious effort to allow everything. Mm-hmm. And then users started liking that and wanted to share their stuff that they've made and curated together. And then the messaging changed around what it was because people were using it for this new thing. Mm-hmm. So this is very, just a very slow, gradual, things changed over time and not everything caught up. I mean, KDE is this very old project. This KDE store used to be kde-look.org, and it's at least 15 years
old. Wait, hold up. Wait, so you had a different domain that was not on the KDE domain?
Yeah, so it was run independently. Set up by how most things get set up. Some person who likes KDE goes and, oh, I'm going to create this website to curate all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And there used to be two. There was kde-look.org and kde-apps.org.
Right.
And I mean, this is the days before Flatpaks and Snaps and anything, by a long, long way. Mm-hmm. And kde-apps had all of the binary content that you download and compile yourself and type ./configure, because that was the way things were back in the day. And kde-look had the graphical assets. There was no confusion. That's how things were nicely split. KDE apps faded away over time because there are new ways to get apps now, mm-hmm. which generally better. No people aren't just compiling things by hand all of the time. KDE looks came around. That sort of split off into gnome-look.org, XFCE look, and all these spin-off websites, which on some of those have died anyway because they've got new replacements to come about. I don't think anybody uses gnome-look.org. And KDE wanted to sort of bring it under our umbrella. We've got a domain name, redirect. And it stayed. I don't know who hosted it. I don't know the details of all of this sort of thing. Mm-hmm. Might be us, might still be third party. But, you know, it became part of store.kde.org.
Right. Well, what I do know with the store is, I believe Nate is listed as one of the moderators.
Probably. He's everywhere.
Give me a second. Yes, Nate is on. I don't know how actively. I know he deleted the recent plugin, so he definitely gets involved there sometimes. But I don't know if he's checking it frequently or just going there when someone tells him that something needs to be removed.
Yeah. So I mean, there's a channel where you can reach out and just tell people. Mm-hmm. And normally, it's spam just being uploaded and
there is
a lot of. A load of reviews, some stuff doesn't make it anywhere. It's normally a lot of comments, which are just telling people to buy drugs on the internet rather than content.
Right.
So, here's any website, it gets filled with gibberish. Mm-hmm. And it needs moderation, which is time consuming. And people do review stuff. Stuff does get taken down. Mm-hmm. So, that part's not abnormal. In fact, it's you have a website, bad stuff can get on it.
Absolutely, yeah.
And there's a lot of things on there. We had a check. There's 30,000 items on the store.kde.org, which is mostly just anime wallpapers. But if you ignore those 29,000, there's quite a lot of content. So nobody wants to, you know, just chuck that away because good stuff on there.
Yeah, so one of the issues I brought up in my video is the fact that it's on store.kde.org. Because it's on that domain, it looks a lot more official than it otherwise is treated by the project. From my understanding, the store is treated as this outside thing. Like, we have it on our domain, it's the store that you generally go to, but it's not something that the KDE project is actively moderating or anything like that. And like, I think having it on the official KDE domain does make it seem a lot more, like, official than it otherwise should be treated. I think the AUR does the same thing. It's on the official Arch domain, but they have a big, bold disclaimer at the top of the page that's like, use at your own risk. Don't be stupid. Right.
Yeah, and the fact that you've got content and add-ons that can do stuff isn't weird. I mean, GNOME extensions can do anything.
Sure.
Inkscape extensions can do anything. GIMP extensions you can download and they do
GIMP
anything.
GIMP is just Python.
Right, exactly. You know, in Python you import OS, whatever. No.
Yeah.
All of these things are absolutely... They exist and people do good stuff with them.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that, then you end up with this first-party and third-party system where... What we do is privileged and special, but you can't compete. And it is important to allow people to, well, I'm going to bank my own network configuration applet, and they can build that up, maybe talk to IWD instead of network manager or something. It can build it up independently, users can use it, and then at some point we could say, well, you know what, we'll swap it out. I mean, that's happened in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So it's important to have this open level playing field.
Mm-mm.
But, you know, there's challenges that come with it.
I think if you don't have some sort of official means, you end up encouraging users down like a much worse route, because what will happen is the plugins will still exist, but they'll be on GitHub repos, and you might have people that are like, oh, install it with curl pipe into bash, which... is not a good... I'm doing a video on this soon. Like, people need to stop recommending this as a good idea. Just please download the script first, look at it, and then do it. Like, even if the developer's not trying to be malicious with a download method like that, if the download breaks in the middle of the download, you might have a script where you have a malformed RM command, and that could end up deleting parts of your system, and you don't want that to happen. Just download the file, check it, then run it. Very simple.
Yep. I mean, I was about to say, oh, you should have a podcast.
Yeah, imagine that.
Yes.
You can't stop. Sorry,
I got so distracted by it. And I think actually what's one of the problems is us main devs weren't using a store for some of our content. I think if we'd used a store more, we would have taken more care about it.
Right.
Whereas, because right now, your core devs, when they want to make a plasmoid for something abnormal, we've got this one repo of KDE Plasma add-ons where we ship stuff that we don't want in the core because it's a bit too... It's extra stuff, like a desktop cube. Nobody needs a desktop cube. It's in this extra repository where you can go and get it.
Mm-hmm.
But almost all your distributions... That goes gets given to users through your distribution channels. Your regular... Pac-Man, Debian stuff. So we stopped caring about the store as main developers. And I think that's actually part of the problem, that we need to use the stuff that we want other users to use.
So I the reason I laugh there is I just noticed that people actually have been watching. They did watch the stream. I noticed that the README on Plasma add-ons now has a list of what's in Plasma add-ons, which is something I've brought up multiple times. Like, previously there wasn't anything there. It was just like, it's a thing that exists. You can download Plasma add-ons.
It was a dumping ground.
Yeah. It was a dumping ground where if a user wanted to install it, like, they didn't actually know what they were getting with it. Like, people
add-on. Would have...
Yeah, add-ons of some description.
Yeah.
No, I get it. Like, it makes sense as a dumping ground, and it sort of creates this... It did this thing before, like, where you were saying there's, like, a tiered system where you have like the third party and the first party, where even though this is like the add-ons thing, it's the official Plasma add-ons. It's on the Plasma GitLab, so it's like a little bit different to being on the store.
Yeah. So I think if we start using a store more, it's actually going to encourage us to make a store that works, where we can say, well, you know what, we've verified this.
Mm-hmm.
Here's a little batch, and doing a more additional checks that we want to do.
Right. No, that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, what general things are being discussed in regards to the, like, changing global themes? I know there's, like, a couple of open merge requests that And I know that, like, there was a... Was it the meeting that you guys were having, you maybe would discuss stuff today? I think, like, or yesterday?
It was Monday.
Okay.
Monday. Okay. So, notes on plasmadevel.org. Yeah, so, I mean, it's things which are happening. I mean, something we all knew. So, as people right now are wanting to do is very knee-jerk reactions.
Right.
Of, this has existed for 10 years, but now we need to shut it down completely.
I did see something like, shut it, delete KNU stuff. We don't need it.
Yeah, yeah. Shut it all down. And we don't want to just jump into something. We definitely need to address things. We don't need to jump into things. Especially as we have stepped up in moderation on server side as well, which is something happening somewhat transparently in the background.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's things happening. So we are separating different types of content to have different warning messages because mm-hmm. we wanted to change that warning message when you first download it. Because that's like the initial step that we can get to users within a few weeks when your translations come in.
So that's like that's the warning message if you go to like get new, if, like the, yeah. the little box at the top. Yeah, okay. Because right now what it says... Message. For anyone who doesn't know, what it says right now is the content available here has been uploaded by users like you and has not been reviewed by your distributor for functionality or stability. Which is a fine message, but my issue is it didn't mention KDE there. Like it, because it's on the KDE store, it sort of implied that it's reviewed by KDE because they don't mention it in the warning. Like it's a weird message.
Yeah, and it is reviewed by people who are... KDE people. I mean, you mentioned Nate, there's Justin, there's a bunch of other people. It's not
right, but like, it's not like every single theme's been reviewed.
Yeah. So our message is changing, but we don't want to just blindly change it because then it's just ignorable. If we change it so downloading a JPEG anime wallpaper, which there's too many of, if that has a big warning, everyone's just going lawyer warning.
Absolutely.
So it's about trying to make it more specific so people actually look at it. So that's the first step that's happening. That's going to land very soon.
Mm-hmm.
And then architecturally, in global themes, is something that's just grown and grown and grown into this monster where we didn't care about security because it was never intended for it.
Right.
So now we're just trying to split stuff out of that and then replace that with some new mechanism.
Mm-hmm.
So the first step is coming up with new ways to do things that people were doing that could have been done before into these separate channels. So if a distribution needs to change lock screen, they've got an option to do that. But that doesn't necessarily need to be distributed on the store. It can be separate channels, that sort of thing. In fact, probably doesn't need to be on the store at all. That sort of level of unnecessary customization. Some people need it. I mean, I know we get quite a lot of government deployments, and certainly one of the big cities. They've got a lock screen. They've replaced a background with a video of the city before you can unlock your screen because that was important to them. The city of Munich had various things. So you know, big deployments. You need to be able to provide these hooks.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, so correct me if I'm wrong here, but the lock screen themes are an especially security issue-y one. Because it depends on the way that SDDM was set up on that distro. I know Neon has it in its own SDDM user, but some will run it as root.
No, I don't think that's true. So SDDM always has a tiny part that runs as root.
Mm-hmm.
And then a tiny part runs another user.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd have to explicitly go out of your way to get that wrong.
Mm-hmm.
So it will always run as another user. But it's like it's two steps. So you agree to part where like you've got your visuals on screen, but you do need some back end part running as root.
Mm-hmm.
It shouldn't ever be a case where that front end runs as root.
Mm-hmm.
There is a case where you can configure the X server beneath that to run as root.
Right, right.
But that's for different reasons. Historical.
Yeah. But I think splitting things out into their own... Like, I know there's, like, some discussion here about like splitting all the code out into its own separate code stuff and then having the themes be just purely cosmetic themes. I don't know if that's going to be what happens in the long run, but I know it has had a little bit of discussion.
Yeah, I mean, the themes themselves are. I mean, this is one of the problems of that news cycle, is people, you get your blog spam comments, you read a news article, and then they paraphrase it, and then somebody else reads that article, paraphrases it, and then you go on. And then when those people write it, and you read it, it makes it sound like the sort of theme that could be replaced by CSS or metadata has some security hole in it. And it was never a security hole like that. It was just bad communication. So those themes already should be safe. I mean, we're not going to make any promises. They need a good review from yes, but they are just metadata. So they are already individually downloadable. So, finding an alternative way to group that together without having any of the other stuff that Global Themes has is probably on the cards.
I think, I do think that's for the best. That's obviously like a long-term thing. I think more short-term stuff is definitely like sorting out a way to handle the warning message. Like that's, obviously you need to deal with translation, and like translation's a big problem because you want to make sure like the tone and the severity are like similar levels across the different languages, which I'm sure is a absolute nightmare for the translation people.
I've got no way to review it, so turn up.
Hopefully they know what they're doing with that.
Our translation team, from what I've heard, are awesome, so you definitely hear good feedback from people saying that. Obviously it depends on the language, I'm sure, but and then our translation framework, I assume it's quite common, but you have your message, but can also write another message that only translators can see, where you can say, this is what I'm trying to say in the part you're translating. So you can provide their message.
So it's like notes for the translation.
Exactly, yes.
Okay, that makes sense. Actually, regarding the message, there is one thing that I do think is weird about the way it's handled. Like, the way it's currently being handled. So, you know, you can, like, set an accent color, and that is used for, like, I don't know, highlighting things and all that. Why does the accent color affect the info box window? Like, the box that the text is in on that?
I don't know. It's clearly deliberate.
Because I've got my accent color set to red, so my info boxes are now red, which is obviously not what info box is supposed to be.
I mean, it's a problem with configuration. If you provide too much, where is the line? What should be configured? What shouldn't?
Right.
I know. I do fall into a don't theme my apps category type of person.
Well, I'm running Breeze Dark right now. The only thing I've changed regarding to the theme is the accent color.
And look what's happened. No, I think that's deliberate. I mean, there's different categories of or when you have these inline messages.
Yeah.
What you want to convey. And if you hard code colors, you would upset some people, but sure, some things should be. So it's a balance.
Right.
I mean, I'm going to just punt that question to some designers.
It's not like a major deal, I guess, but it's just something I did notice that seemed a little bit off to me. But.
Yeah.
So. Yeah, I think it's kind of funny that you had this situation happen so close to the Snap situation, like, just a few days prior. Because, like, you can kind of, like, look at the response from both. And I think the way KDE's handled things is actually really good. The canonical response is interesting, to say the least. I don't know if you want to get into that, but
I don't know much about your canonical store situation.
They didn't do anything.
Say again, sorry?
They didn't do anything until Alan Pope made a thread on the forum, was like, hey guys, can you like stop people uploading like for a couple of days?
There are parallels. I mean, we knew the store was in this situation and we acted when the social media stuff hit. Because, I mean, that really emphasised how much disconnect there was between what those comments were saying of, I didn't know this. So, I mean, that's why we're acting. I mean, you're right, because I mean, I've always had this attitude of, well, you're downloading a third-party add-on, but it's no different, and I think I even use that phrase in my comments, it's no different to your Snap Store having malware, and then I look down, and there's, like, people complaining about your Snap Store having malware, and, okay, right, that parallel is correct, but it's not an excuse, it's just a statement.
What do you think about the idea of changing the name of Global Themes? Assuming that... I think if they...
Needs to happen.
If they are just themes, I think Global Themes fine. But if you're going to have code in there, I don't know what the best name would be. Because, like, the Global Themes in their current state are kind of like... they're like a mega add-on. Nate suggested, like, having the word package or plugin in there. I don't know what a good word for it would be, though. That's the thing.
The best one I've seen in the comment section was full desktop mod. And I quite like that.
I like it as well. I don't know though. Like naming things are hard, right? Like
naming things is hard. I mean, that's the biggest problem in computer science, right? So naming things. I mean, underneath this is called a look and feel package. That's a technical term still there. Also not a good name.
Naming things is hard, and that's why we have a window manager called TWM, Tom's Window Manager.
Good name.
Yeah, it's a fine name. Works just fine.
Works well for Tom.
Yeah. So, I guess that's pretty much all that needs to be said on the global theme stuff, because right now it's just... It's in the process of being resolved, and... Like, it's not 100% clear, like, what those resolutions are fully going to be.
No, I mean, it's going to be a gradual process. It's immediate actions. And then, I mean, long term, we've talked about being able to run some of these things from getting them from FlatHub and running in a sandbox environment. And
okay.
It's tech demos for all of this that spans back years as gradual progress on some of these things. Mm-hmm. Like our search providers. So when you type in alt space and you start searching, it used to be a set of plugins, and plugins are...
I've never used that binding.
Wow. Okay, we're going to talk about your Plasma experience, because I think you've handicapped yourself in multiple ways.
Mm-hmm.
Again, discoverability. I guess that's a messaging. So, you've got this feature, which you're now going to love and use. you can search for anything, and that's backed by plugins, and plugins are limited. Plugins are a problem. So just from security, because you can't sandbox parts of an application, and also just distribution. It's distributing a binary is a mess. Mm-hmm. So we've got all of those out of process, so they could be completely sandboxed. They can be downloadable from this, from FlatHub in theory. It's just some hooks on getting that integration to say, oh, this is actually not an application, but I want to be debug activated and whatnot. So just these tiny little hooks remaining, but a lot of that core infrastructure is there. So,
okay.
You know, there's all of that stuff happening around, and it's going to be amazing in 10 years, maybe.
Yeah, by the time we have Plasma 7, we're in a good state. Yeah. So I guess let's move into Plasma 6 stuff. We can either go into my experience with it, or we can talk about like the general reception of it.
Well, I'm gonna go with general reception first.
Okay, sure, we can do that.
Yeah, and then you can bring everybody down. No. In our 0.0 releases have a history of being questionable, and that's putting it very favourably.
People remember 4, but what was 5 like then?
5 wasn't as bad. 5 was nowhere near as bad as 4. 4 had a problem of last
being a dev minute.
This whole let's rewrite a workspace and come up with all these new ideas, a bit too much ambition. We were riding high on the KDE3 stage, which is sort of where I joined KDE. We had these really big apps which were going well. We had this desktop that was functional, and then trying to land a rewrite too late in the cycle.
Right.
And that caused a lot of problems of not all parts of KDE are equal. Mm. And the stuff what we had with the desktop just wasn't ready yet, and it didn't get pushed back. I mean, I was very, very junior back in those days. I wasn't. But yeah, it wasn't ready.
Mm-hmm.
So 5 was better. We learned a lot from that. It still had big changes. And then 6, generally, has not been any massive freakouts.
Mm-hmm.
From people who have upgraded from 5.27 to 6, there's not been any, oh my goodness, what's happened? This is the worst thing ever.
I think the biggest, oh my god, what's happened? This is the worst thing ever, is people who are like, my plugins don't work anymore. That's pretty much the worst I've seen.
Yeah, which is a challenge of, once you have API compatibility, at some point it needs to break. And that's always a challenge. And it's why we have these 0.0 releases, which are problematic, is because there's a warm chance to break things for 6 years. So people try and get lots and lots and lots of stuff in because it's a warm opportunity. And it's not just us doing that, it's our upstream as well. Qt, so they are extremely good at being backwards compatible.
Mm-hmm.
Even in major and minor releases, but it's still an overhead. And when these big changes happen, it all gets bundled up together. So we've got all of our upstream changes and all of our changes, and they have to come at the same time because of binary compatibility in C++ for now. And while developers still depend on that sort of thing, with the way distributions work, there's one chance to change everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not the best way for things to work. The good news is that's not going to happen much longer, because as we've seen FlatHub and Container Tech, or Snaps, or it's Container Tech, where you have your application and all of the libraries, then we don't need to have such massive ABI promises of we're going to be completely stable for 5 years, because someone wants to run an old version of a library, yeah, I can do that. There's no need for them to upgrade at the same time. And if that allows us to make changes more iteratively rather than waiting and bundling things up, that's going to be a good thing. So I envision and hope that we're going to have KDE Framework 7, KDE Framework 8 with much shorter cadences than 10 years because this container tech is going to help.
Mm-hmm. I've been hearing from a lot of different people from like all different parts of the open source space about like container tech on the desktop, and I know there's like people who just are really confused about it still, and like it's not new, right? It's been around for like a decade, but it's kind of like new in the desktop space in a sense. It's new in like it getting popular and like being a thing that you're just, most people probably have at least a couple of containerized applications installed. Even if you're not on a fully containerized system or like anything else like that, you probably have at least like one or two Flatpaks or maybe Snaps, yeah.
Once that becomes the default way, that's going to give library maintainers, if we get rid of all these ABI promises and not get rid of all of them, and you still need to maintain it within this minor release cycle, but if it's easier to just say, well, we're breaking, but your app's going to be fine, that's going to be a good thing to be able to break up more often, because then we're not going to have these big 0.0s where we have to bundle everything together.
Mm-hmm. I think that'll be interesting. I'm very curious to see what'll happen by the next time it's time to do like a big new release, like what the state of things are going to be in, whether really that can happen yet, or whether it's going to be like the next cycle after that. It's really hard to guess what's going to happen, well, like 5-6 years from now.
Definitely, but I think the next big Plasma KD release is going to, hopefully be in a point where most apps don't come from a distribution but come from container tech. some distributions might not want to hear that, but it's going to be good for the user, and that ultimately that's what matters.
Mm-hmm. So maybe this is going to be not popular to hear. Would you say that at some point in the future we're going to be at a point where not doing basically all your user applications in containers is kind of going to be thought of in a similar way to, like, you know, those distros that don't ship systemd, or there's going to be distros coming soon that don't ship Wayland, and they're like Xorg only distros. It's going to happen. Give it enough.
It's definitely going to happen. I mean, and it's, I think we have a responsibility as upstream to allow this to happen.
Mm-hmm.
But then if they get a file conflicts and if they get a library problems, that can be on them to try and sort out and find their own way of handling this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So what has the general reception for Plasma 6 been like so far?
Yes. So generally, certainly our first week was extremely positive. Mm-hmm. And I was very happy to see that, obviously. So our first week, very positive. People saying nice things. We also had the Wayland by default switch as well.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very important because a lot of people, end users, don't necessarily change defaults. I mean, I've got a metrics chart of how many Wayland users we have on people doing a telemetry. And when the default switched, that jumped. Unsurprisingly. I mean, it's what happened. So, and that's, it's a good thing for us in a way. So, because with the accession, our systems were somewhat slow compared to on these Wayland compositors.
Mm-hmm.
And that was obviously reflected bad on us. But Wayland's also in a slightly problematic state of not everything works quite as well as it should do. Yes, Wayland is still in flux. I would not call Wayland finished at an application level. So even though we have Plasma's in a good state, Quinn's in a pretty good state,
mm-hmm.
The applications do have issues. So trying to find that balance of where do we switch? Of, we're certainly not regression-free for all these applications,
mm-hmm.
but overall it's a better experience, but that's subjective. And finding that point of, well, we need to do it because otherwise we're lagging behind. So
yeah,
I think that's been a good thing. And overall, we've not had many complaints about switching a default. I guess people who have issues know how to switch back.
Well, right now, the people who are using Plasma 6 would be those on rolling releases, people who are testing out the Fedora beta, and people who are running Neon, I guess. Those seem like the main group. I don't think there's any, like, point release that's shipping it yet. Like, in their full Sable release.
You're right. And Fedora's been on Wayland by default for a lot longer anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So,
but like, what I was getting at there is like the people. Sorry, no, it's all good. I cut you off.
No, you're going sort of like people using it now are sort of tech enthusiasts.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, no, you're right, absolutely. And that is true. There are also some of the most brutal. So, they're more likely to provide feedback in some form.
Yeah, that's one way to put it.
Yes. I mean, it's kind of weird. Our bug tracker, you see the same names over and over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And then you speak to people, when you go to, you know, FOSDEM or whatever, and you speak to all your actual users, and then they're a very different group of people to people who interact with you on the social medias or your bug trackers and whatnot. So you've got these very different groups, and it's easy to end up pandering to the group who talk to you rather than the demographic you're necessarily aiming for.
Right, yeah. This is very much the same on YouTube. Like, so there is this. I'm sure it's gonna be like similar with something like Plasma as well. There is this viewer power fantasy that they are like the center of attention. Like the opinion that they have on it is the opinion that everybody holds. And in reality, it's not at all. And a lot of the time, what they think is best is not what most people think is going to work. Like, I'll get people that say they don't like this style of video, and I look at my numbers, and it's like, best video in the period. Like, okay, but like, the numbers tell me that you're wrong, so...
I'm a big fan of metrics in general.
They're very good. Metrics don't... The numbers do not lie.
Yeah, exactly. So we need more of that.
Mm-hmm.
So, plus my six feedback. We keep sort of drifting off on that.
Yeah, yeah.
That first week was, I was overwhelmingly positive.
Mm-hmm.
And then we were sort of waiting for the storm. and we were like, okay, storm hasn't happened yet. We were just sort of confused, looking, waiting for things to explode. And nothing really exploded. It has been sort of a reality kicking off that wave of excitement of,
mm-hmm.
I like it, but I wish, blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Not naming any names, Brody. and that sentiment's been repeated in various other, other platforms of, you know, I'm using it, I'm happy with the upgrade didn't explode, things are generally better, but I've still got quite a bit to sort out.
Right.
And we upstream have quite a bit to sort out. I mean, there is a problem that we are this very old project with a lot of craft that's dragging behind us, and every now and again we have to take that oldest, worst piece, fix it up, then take the next oldest, worst piece and fix it up. Right. And there are several weak parts of Plasma right now where that needs to happen. I mean, that's a normal part of software development. It's not necessarily a bad thing, but there's definitely stuff to fix. There's stuff that we don't like.
Mm-hmm. Right, like my personal pet peeve right now, I did this video the other day on the way that virtual desktops work in Plasma. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you know what I'm getting at here.
Well, I know it's going to be complaining.
That's true. You are very right there. No,
no,
it's fine. It's fine. Take as many jabs as you want. No, it's that virtual desktops are shared across all your screens instead of being per screen. So if you swap to Workspace 2, it swaps to Workspace 2 on every screen. And there's been an open issue about it since KDE 3, I believe.
I can imagine that. And it's one of the things that some people want it, and the window manager part's super trivial. We can do a window manager part easily. The challenging part is when you have this modular user experience where you don't say, we always have a panel on every screen.
Mm.
Well, how do you make a pager work? And if it's with a panel on the warm, I mean, what GNOME does, GNOME has a setting for per screen virtual desktops, but they've got this concept of your primary stays and you can moodily move to secondary.
Yeah.
And if you can control how it interacts with the rest of the stack, that's fine. I mean, if you're only a window manager, that's fine. You don't have these things like pages and the context menus and your task manager and whatnot to have to take into consideration.
Right, right.
And that's the part that I'm not quite sure how that would play out.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's not just a case of making this work, but it's also creating a new communication channel for your task manager to say, I mean, right now, if you're on X11 specifically, I've got a window on screen A, a window on screen 2, on a second, on a different
screen
version.
Screen A and screen 2, manager, yeah, thank you for the naming.
Pardon?
You said screen A and screen 2.
Sorry, I got...
No, it's fine.
Yes, well, users can name things however
they can do that, yes. Screen,
on virtual desktop C. No, it's a task manager that does this filtering of saying, well, I know what all your windows are, I know what virtual desktop I'm on, I know what screen I'm on if I'm filtering by that. So it's that ancillary part of that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not. I mean, before there was stuff with... a specification, but we would need to come up with our own specification to talk to that task manager as well. So, which on Wayland we have. On Wayland we've got a completely bespoke protocol to talk to your task manager and say, here's the information of what's available.
Mm-hmm.
So when we drop an X11 session, at some point, some of these things become easier because you don't have to write two separate code paths. Mm-hmm. We can just tell your task manager, this is visible, you don't need to know why it's visible, but you should show it. Mm-hmm. And that sort of problem goes away because Quinn can just tell it this sort of information. Mm-hmm. But I mean, everyone's got their own feature request.
Sure.
And it takes somebody who wants it to go and work on it, I guess, because well, I mean, when it comes to feature requests, our bug tracker ticks filled up with feature requests, and it takes an incredibly good feature request to make me think, you know what, I'm going to stop doing the things that I want to do, I think that idea is better. Mm-hmm. So when we get these feature requests, often people try and say why they want it. Right? They'll say, I want this because, and they'll give an impassioned reason why they want it. But what I don't do is that impassioned reason of why it's good for everybody, why it's good for your ecosystem. Because mm-hmm. that's the sort of comment that makes me go, well, you know, actually, that's going to make my product better. Therefore, we should put time in it.
Mm-hmm. No, that is understandable, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I've got my own list of things I want to do. If I was locked in a room with my computer for 100 years, I could keep myself busy. Not like that, but writing code. And I think every developer's like that. There's no shortage of ideas. So feature requests, it's all about trying to sell your idea of why it's so much better than the ideas that they already have.
Well, I've got a video on the tiling. I won't spoil the entire video. But one of the feature requests I did bring up in that, I have opened up the wish list thing as well for it. Mm-hmm. So what I don't like about the way it currently works is the quick tiling bindings don't interact with the tiling editor layout.
Yeah. That was true. Oh, it's true in 6.9. In fact, it's true right now. When we added this tile or snap tile support, because we've got your original version, which was with the corners, and then we added in this customization sort of option level of the next step on from that. Mm-hmm. And they share some code underneath. 6.1, they're going to share even more code. Mm-hmm. And it's definitely going to be sort of moving toward that. But it was done in a let's not introduce regressions and workflow changes way, which you need to do to an extent. Be somewhat conservative and have a slow path of some people are used to just snapping, dragging things to a corner and whatever. So, I mean, Quinn's not a tiling window manager. And, I mean, if people want that, I mean, I don't want to say they should use something else, but sometimes that's the right answer. Every desktop does cater for something different. And
Cosmic Alpha's out next month.
Wait, sorry. Month after that. It's still May.
Yeah,
it's still March, isn't it?
Interest about Cosmic. Yeah, I mean, that is by default. I mean, if you build up a Cosmic tiling render manager with that as your intention, you're going to get a different result. So,
well, Cosmic's also interesting because, like, you, as you said a couple of times, KDE is a very, very old project. Whereas Cosmic, it only started like a year ago, so it doesn't have that legacy cruft there. They can start at like a much cleaner state than KDE is in. It's not like they're trying to fix up, you know, 20-year-old code bases where people thought that doing this thing was a good idea, or something's designed around the way the X works and now it has to be redesigned for like a more Wayland approach. Like, you start from doing it the way that you'd want to do it if you had a clean slate from today.
And that's got a lot of potential. And there's an advantage to having years of experience and fixes in sorts of things. I mean, mm-hmm. we've got support for all sorts of weird calendars and whatnot for things that I don't understand but are very important to some people, you know, and I suspect, I'm not going to make claims, but I suspect any new desktop coming in isn't going to have that sort of thing. Right. It's probably not going to have a UI for setting up your printer or your Thunderbolt authorization or these things. So, I mean, nobody expects that on day zero. The question is, will they build up in the community enough to sort of get to that level? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's going to be the exciting part, is does Pop! OS build a community and fledge out? and how I manage that, because having community contributions is a challenge sometimes. I mean, it's an amazing thing. I mean, I provide community contributions. We get some amazing stuff from amazing contributors. Also, where you end up with quite difficult code, if you don't have a top-level design down of
right
people writing things. So how PopOS embraces that is going to be interesting to see, and only time will tell on that.
Mm.
So, I mean, I'm definitely going to try it out when it's available somewhere. I'm sure you will too. And,
yeah, I definitely will be.
And I wish this would be and the best, or second best, obviously.
It's fine.
But the developers I've spoken to from Pop OS
For the record, Carl Rochelle does watch this show, so he might hear the System 6 CEO. I'll drag him back on the show, ask him about that one. Anyway, I sidetracked you there on what you were saying.
I'm just focused on Pop OS now, or Cosmic.
I think what people need to realize is, like, the desktops we have on Linux aren't, like, competitors in the same sense as, like, a product would be. Like, obviously you want your desktop to be the best desktop there is, but it's not like, you know, like, you know, you guys can take inspiration from what other desktops are doing. If there's something that Cosmic is doing really well, then, like, you guys can integrate that into Plasma as well if someone wants to do that. Or if Plasma is doing something well, then they can integrate that into their system. Like, what people are trying to do is, at the end of the day, just make better software.
Yeah, I mean, there were sometimes tensions raised. Mostly not about competing, it's about trying to make sure your stuff integrates into other people's desktops and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And making sure that's a consistent playing field doesn't always happen. I mean, we have several GNOME-specific workarounds in Qt Wayland, which, I mean, happens. And you want to see what's reciprocated. So, mm-hmm. So I mean, there's tensions, but I mean, when you have an in-life meetup, everyone's always positive. Everyone wants the same thing of yeah. Linux is thrive, and we do have different demographics, mm-hmm. and that's not necessarily a bad thing. Not sure where Pop OS is aiming now. Are targeting typical users? I mean, System 76 sells laptops to regular people.
Mm-hmm.
So where they pitch themselves is also a bit of an unknown right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, they have, like, business partners as well, and, like, I don't know. I'm curious to see what ends up happening with it. I hope it becomes another good desktop, because that means that there is the potential to have another, maybe this isn't a good thing actually, another voice in the Wayland protocol discussion.
And they are active there, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll have more clout when they have more users.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which you'd hope to make sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it'll be also be interesting how Iced, that toolkit, develops as well.
Yeah, Rust GUI stuff is very, very new. Like, past couple of years, sort of new. So, they're like, a lot of the Iced, like, functionality, if you look at the Iced repo, I think, like, Jeremy Soller is one of the top contributors now. Like, that's how new we're talking with the GUI stuff in Rust.
So, that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out. And I don't want to speculate. I'm just going to sit back and hope that we don't get completely crushed.
I don't know. I'm sure there's going to be people trying it out. And I like, what you're not going to be able to do, no matter what, is, as you said, like, compete with that years and years of community add-ons and all of this stuff. Like, that just doesn't happen overnight. Like, whether it be things that are built into Plasma, or whether it be additional, like, plasmoids and whatever, like, that's something that comes over time and comes from a active and thriving community. But I'm sure if people like it, they will make things for it if the API is reasonable enough to make things for it.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that integrate well into it as well, you know, application stack. I mean, because one thing that KDE's always excelled at is we don't have necessarily a most apps, but apps we have tend to be the massive big hitters that are on multiple platforms, those Kden Lives, Creators, Kates and whatnot, because our backend stack, that Qt and everything, that's a very multi-platform. I mean, Qt's multi-platform first. It's not Wayland first. It's multi-platform first. Wayland's just this side, forgotten, not forgotten about thing, but it's not the main focus. So getting our apps on Android or whatever is relatively trivial. Even WebAssembly, we can compile some of our apps to that. So we've got these big header apps, which nobody else can compete with yet. But we don't necessarily have a bulk of apps as well. So there's definitely different things that we're all aiming for.
In regards to Qt, you mentioned also at some point, obviously, Plasma KDE is going to drop X11 support one day. We don't know when,
one day. Yeah.
Would it happen... I don't know, maybe this is just like you can't really answer this yet because it's not really sure, but would that happen because Qt is dropping X11 support, or do you see it happening before that time?
It'll probably happen before that time because Qt's got little maintenance overburden with maintaining X support because the platform abstraction's really quite good. I mean, they've got 14 platforms, I think, that Qt can run on. So when you've got that many, having that one extra one, it's not slowing you down in any way.
Right.
And it doesn't need any changes. It just works for now. And whilst they have people using it, they're not going to drop it. So they're not going to drop it before us.
Mm-hmm. Right. Obviously. Yeah, that makes sense.
Right. So from that point of view, I think we'll end up dropping things first. Mm-hmm. How we drop things is also not decided, because it's probably not going to be we support it and then we don't. It's going to be either we start dropping some specific functionality on X11, like saying, okay, you've got X11, but you can't disable your compositor anymore because that's an annoying code path to try and maintain that and Wayland. Or it would be, this part is for a fork of Qwin. I have two versions of Qwin, one which is maintaining, one which is stuck on a different mode in a different repository, and you download one of two different repositories. That's on the cards. So it's probably going to be a slightly slow, gradual thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, eventually it's going to happen, well, because it does hold us back.
You've already taken the first step with Wayland now being the default. So it's already at that point where a lot of people, unless you actively know, like, the difference between X11 and Wayland and why you might want to run one over the other, like, most people are probably... I know, generally, most people are running Wayland at this point. I think it's at least from the polling that I've done, like, I had, like, 10,000 people answer the poll I had, and it was, like, 55-45 with Wayland just ahead. But it might be skewed with my audience, maybe, but it's definitely close.
So in our metrics downstream, we've got, before Plasma 6, we were only at 20% Wayland.
Wow.
30%. Gaming on Linux.org has stats where Wayland's only on the 20-30% as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's rising. For us, I know our metrics, we've jumped up to 35% quite quickly, and as those other distributions are going to hit, that number's going to jump.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's relatively low. It'd be interesting to see GNOME's numbers, because you'd expect that to be much, much higher.
Well, they've been Wayland default for a much longer... I don't know when the project went Wayland default, but Fedora went Wayland default, like, way before it was ready, like four or 5 years ago. Like, it actively, things were just broken. Like, you couldn't screen record back then. Like, basic things just didn't work. But Fedora, they do things when Fedora wants to do things. Like, Fedora was shipping systemd, the first distro. They were the first ones to do it. They were the first distro to ship Pulse Audio. Like, Fedora does Fedora what Fedora wants to do. Yeah. But, yeah.
And so, are they also planning on dropping X11 support, which they, is a brave move?
They had to step back away from that because their whatever team it is, I don't remember what it's called, they were like, no, you're not doing that. You can stop shipping it. You can stop shipping the package, but you have to have an X11 package in the repo. That's what they're at right now.
Okay. I mean, I don't see what we gain, what they gain from rushing that, because and if you change the default, you've made a statement. You're going to have people twitching, and there's already a path in that direction. Trying to rush things is only going to get people more infuriated rather than more excited. Mm-hmm. And if people are infuriated, they're going to push back more. So I think it's a bit of a shooting in the foot, but that's their prerogative. So, I mean, I'm proved wrong a lot of the time. So maybe I'll be proved wrong again here. So we'll see what happens. I mean, they switched to Wayland before I thought it was a good idea, and they got good results out of it because other people were more confident. Because I mean, they don't see how your meat is made, as it were. So
I think in the long run, Fedora is right. Like, I don't think any of the changes they've made have been wrong. Okay, they swapped systemd. They swapped Pulse Audio, swapped Pipewire, like, they swapped Wayland. All of these changes, long run, are correct. It's just when they do it, you know, it's just maybe a touch too soon. I think with the dropping Wayland stuff, like, we both know there are actual legitimate problems that still exist in the Wayland session. I've covered plenty of stuff, whether it be related to, like, the dumbest protocol discussion. I don't know how it's gotten so many comments. Like, having window icons and have, like, a protocol to set window icons. It has, like, 500 comments on it now. I don't know why it's such a insane protocol. But there's other things. Like, what is it? The VR protocol.
Yes.
The one that GNOME doesn't support that I'm blanking the name on.
DRM Leaks.
That one, yes. Like, there's things like that still aren't properly dealt with. It's dealt with everywhere else, except GNOME, but...
And accessibility, which is also...
Absolutely, yeah.
For a lot of people, not an important thing at all. For some people, the most important thing in the world.
Well, also, accessibility is not like a one-size-fits-all thing. Like, I had a guy... I brought this guy up a bunch of times, but I had a guy on the other time, the other week. He has, perfect hand movement, but his vision is very impaired, so he runs Plasma at, like, he uses, like, the desktop effect, like, zoom thing, and he runs at, like, 1600% zoom, and he's a game developer. Like, he develops a game in Unity at, like, doing that. I think he swapped back to Windows now because he had some other unrelated issue, but, yeah. Like, that is great for those people, but then there's the whole issue of screen reader support and having the global hotkeys working with that. And I know there's the global shortcut portal now, but there's not really anything that's using it. And I don't think GNOME has their shortcut portal implemented yet. So it's like this weird... There's a solution that is there. It's just the piping to the solution is not yet in place. And I don't know if... Does the KDE portal have an interface for the shortcut portal yet?
Yeah, we did that first.
Okay.
But we don't know how that many things using it. So,
my understanding is zero. I don't think there's any actually.
I mean, it's definitely one. Anyway.
okay, one, sure.
That's not really selling it, is it?
No.
I mean, ultimately, at some point, we need to bridge our APIs to your portal APIs, and then we bring in all of these applications for free. Mm-hmm. Because I mean, as these portals become for more and more niche cases, there aren't going to be that many things using them, but the things using them are going to be important. So
right. Yeah. I think what accessibility is still a big one that needs to be dealt with. I think that's the last really fundamental thing, but then there's a lot of rough edges that need to be resolved as well. Like, the rough edges, I think we're going to be dealing with, like, well into, like, Plasma 7. That I don't think it's going to be resolved quickly.
Yeah, there's a discrepancy between should Wayland accommodate what application needs or should applications rewrite themselves based on Wayland. And that's always a grey area which needs to be met with compromise. And that right now, that compromise doesn't exist.
I think where we're really going to see things heat up is when Red Hat fully gives up on X11, which they are scheduled to do at 2032. That's where their last release that ships X11 is going to go EOL. After that point, they are full in on Wayland. So, yeah.
So your clock is ticking?
Yeah.
I'd better stop hanging around on podcasts and do some work. No. But overall, back to the original topic.
Way off sidetracked. It's fine.
Plasma 6 feedback. Your Wayland part hasn't been that big of an issue. That's been met generally with positivity. Mm-hmm. And there's been a couple of minor visual glitches and, you know, because we've got more user base and haven't had users running at code for a year. But once now that's all about to iron out, generally, swimmingly.
So I guess you probably want to hear some of the stuff, some of my thoughts on what's my experience, and you want to talk about that a bit.
I feel your users will want to hear, your viewers are going to want to hear this thing. I'm going to put my fingers in my ears and do this. No, go for it.
Well, I just, like, before, like, the feature request stuff, I do have, like, some general, like, I have a couple of stutter issues. They're only stutter issues with the desktop effects. Like, if I open up the tiling editor, it will stutter before I go into it. If I close the tiling editor, it stutters after I leave it. It's like my mouse stops registering for a second. And same with things like opening up, like, the overview and things like that. Like, there's a stutter before and a stutter after. I know this isn't, like, a one-off thing. I've seen some other people mention it, but other people say that AMD's perfectly rock solid, but I'm running AMD myself, so I don't know.
Yeah, no,
yeah.
Well, the thing is, I do know what bug it is. It's very frustrating. Because obviously we time how long it takes to render a frame, and then we target things based on how long that last frame was and everything. Mm-hmm. And the way we do this is we ask a GPU, oh, can I have a timestamp? And then you ask it asynchronously, and then at the end you say, what was your timestamp when we asked you?
Mm.
Right, because it's a separate channel. And that's great in paper, and it works great on ours. But then it turns out in real life, a lot of the GPU drivers just do random things. Just report times that in the future, in the past, and we're getting these things that, oh, it took 0 seconds to render your last frame. Okay. Well, it takes 0 seconds to render a frame. We'll schedule it here. And then we have to wait till that catches up. And that's not helped by the fact that your GPU clock speeds up and slows down, speeds up and slows down. And when you activate an overview effect, it speeds up, and then it seems some throw away a timing information. And there's guards in there now for when we get given surprise values from this hardware. We're still going to have various issues. I mean, stutter is such a generic symptom that I'm not going to claim it's fixed with that particular issue, but I know we had that issue. A lot of debugging happened by people who were cleverer than me, and we came up with these guards, and to those people it got fixed. Whether yours are the same, I don't know. We'll find out when you get 603.
Oh yeah, that came out today, didn't it?
Well, don't test it now. And then,
well, no, I just haven't updated today.
And stuttering is something that's continually going to be improved upon, performance and whatnot. Okay.
Honestly, I think...
assume that wasn't it.
Well, yeah. Well, I have another... I don't know if it's the same stutter issue, but sometimes it completely locks up and the tiling editor doesn't even open. So that could be the same sort of stutter, and it just... Because I know if you click the background, it closes the tiling editor. So maybe I accidentally click on something, and it closes it before it opens, and it, like, during the time where it's locked up. So I don't know. I don't know what the deal is with that. It's a weird one. It could be anything. As you said, stutter issues are weird, and yeah. But that's like, it's like a, it doesn't happen consistently. It's like once every like 20 or 30 times I do it. So it's,
computers are weird, right?
They are very weird.
You do the same thing, you get the same result. I mean, that's what logic tells you, what your math tells you. That's what, no, it's not what happens.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, one of my issues I know is getting resolved in 6.1. The way the edit panel works. So if you, right now, if you're in edit mode,
the global edit mode and the panel edit mode.
Yeah, and then you click on the little tiny icon in the corner, and that gets you into panel edit mode. I know that there's now going to be a big thing. We just click on the panel. I know I wasn't the first one to suggest that, but I'm happy implemented.
I don't want to get everyone thinking that if you make a YouTube video, your bugs get fixed. But, you know, it's not how feature requests get fixed. But yeah, I mean, tiling edit mode has always been a slow iteration. I mean, and that's the way we do a lot of KDEs. Iterate feedback. Rather than a top down. And that can be good. You can get really good results out of this, constantly listening and evaluating, but it can also end up in this situation where you don't actually have a coherent big picture.
Right.
Someone steps back and goes, actually, we need to look at a big picture again, because in that global edit mode you were in didn't exist before.
Right. Yeah. I heard there was something.
No, that was added, but then not really thinking about how that interacts with other things. And it's one thing that if you're used to it, if you know it, you go, okay, I'm going to edit mode to panel.
Yeah, that's what I got from a lot of people. A lot of the experience flies from people. They're like, no, it works fine. But
yeah.
Yeah. Like, I think...
If you're used to the old way of you had the desktop edit mode or you had the panel edit mode, it's fine. You just continue that thought process. Mm-hmm. But something changed when I kept in sync.
I think what's really important is... Because I've been using Linux for a while, but like 5 or 6 years now. But I haven't used Plasma before, so I can just turn me up a bit. I can hear myself now. Okay. I couldn't hear myself the entire... Did you change your volume?
Not knowingly.
I don't know what happened there. Because I have no experience using Plasma before. Like, I've used GNOME in a couple of streams just because people get angry when I use GNOME, and it's funny. But I hadn't actually actively used Plasma. So I'm going into Plasma, seeing these, like, issues that might have been there since 5 or 4 or so on. And that to me, they are new experiences. And especially with, like, the UX stuff, where I am a new user to Plasma. So, like, the UX that is... sort of treated as, like, this is just the way that Plasma works. Like, I'm seeing this as, like, a new user, and maybe it's fine the way it is, and I'm just stupid. Very possible. Very, actually, incredibly possible. Or maybe there actually is an issue there that people are just used to, and they never really thought about it being an issue because, well, that's just the way that Plasma's always worked.
And it is useful to get that feedback from these new people. And one of the best things that happened in one of the really good peers of Plasma, where there's one developer who works in an office, and he got his colleague who sat next to him to switch to Plasma.
Mm.
And we got all of these merge requests that started with, I was watching my colleague do this task, and then every merge request came in that same format of, I saw this happen, this is why he thought that, this is the confusion, here's how your fix is going to be. Mm-hmm. And they were some of the best series of patches. Of having that. Mm-hmm. Because, I mean, just having someone telling you how things should work doesn't really work. Mm-hmm. But watching somebody else fail is really important.
Yeah, I think that's... I hope that's what people can get out of the videos that I'm doing. Like, I know it can come across like some people see it as like me demanding changes. Like, that's not the way it is. Like, I would like changes to be made. Like, absolutely. I would like it to work the way that I would like it to work. But I also understand that, like, you know, someone has to implement it. And I like to say things kind of straight to the point. And I'm not going to be like, oh, well, you know, dance around what I'm trying to say for 5 minutes before I say anything. Like, I'm going to say exactly what I'm trying to say. And, like, especially in like, the tiling case, because there's a lot of things I would like. I already brought up the quick tiling stuff before, but that's just one of the things. I would also like, you know how there's, like, the load layout button? It would also be nice if there was, like, a way to save your current layout.
If you didn't talk Plasma SDK. But yes, it's in a way.
Yeah, okay. So, it... Well, I think...
Oh, you know, that's me going with the developer mode of, oh, yeah, it is if you do this and this and this.
Yeah, no, I think you also brought...
That doesn't help, right? That was good feedback of you couldn't see how to do it.
I think you brought up... It might have been you or it might have been someone else who... said in one of my comments, maybe it was someone else, I don't know. Someone brought up the fact that you can save existing panels and, like, put them into, like, there's, like, a way you can, like, there's, like, a file or a JavaScript file or
it's
something you write.
Engine.
Yeah, yeah, but there's no, like, easy user base.
In your themes, right? That's how we started some of this.
But, like, there's no specific user-facing save button. It's, like, there's a developer way to do it, and you can write plugins and stuff. Like, obviously, there's a plugin you can do, so there's a way to do it, but it's no, like, save. Like that.
I believe Plasma SDK, which is a whole set of tools of dumping ground, a set of tools for people doing third-party add-ons, that has a button where you can, in the look and feel editor, you can say, save my current layout, so that you can then pop it to somebody else. If you do that with metadata packaging of saying... Well, here's previews, and here's my name and email address and whatnot.
Right, I'm not surprised.
But,
it's
not what
you're
asking for.
So but it's not like
so it doesn't solve your case, right?
But that's what I hope people get out of what I'm doing. Just like I am someone new to Plasma. Here are some things I think would be cool that I think would make it better. If someone wants to work on them, that's cool. If they don't, that's fine. But like. A lot of the time, the things I'm bringing up also that maybe it's things people haven't thought of, or maybe someone thought of like 10 years ago and they forgot about it and it just never got implemented. So I like to open up like sort of a discussion amongst like the community because, you know, there's a lot of people who have ideas, but they see the Plasma issue tracker and they're like, I have no idea where to go. I know it's better than it used to be, but it's, the Plasma issue tracker is like, I wanted to add a wish list for like quick tiling, like the thing regarding quick tiling keys should interact with the tiling editor. So I went to the Plasma bug tracker, then I went to the Plasma section, and then I went to Kwin, then I went to quick tiling, and then there's just so many.
Kwin section rather than Kwin.
Whatever. Well, I initially searched for the Plasma section, but there was no there's no, like, or Plasma desktop section, sorry. Plasma desktop isn't a section there, it's another section. But that's the Plasma bug tracker. I think that the problem with the Plasma bug tracker is just the fact that there are so many things under the Plasma banner. I don't know how you can make it easier to work with. There's just too much there, so it's naturally going to be a nightmare.
There's a lot of stuff. And we knew there was a forum as well for that less intense...
I guess this is why a lot of people will just like report things on the Reddit because they just don't know how to use the bugs.
It's frustrating because that's also something someone who's not used Plasma will go see on social media if that's full of people saying this should work this way, it's not great. So I don't want to fix things just because they're on social media.
Sure.
Just out of spite. Because I am very petty. But I've got no objection to you doing your videos. I mean, when Linus from Linus Tech Tips did it, there was more follow-up. So if you're on the same level, you can.
Look, I will do more. I'll do more work than Linus did. I will make bug reports, which is an improvement. They will come in slowly because I need to find time to actually write them. And people are like, Brody, have you made bug reports, everything you made in the video? No, I haven't found time to sit down and actually write them all. But I'll get to it. Soon, eventually. It will happen at some point.
Okay, well, I look forward to reading them.
Yeah, assuming you can find them in... Assuming I report them in the right section.
Right. If a thing reported to the wrong section, within reason, gets found and moved. Because people subscribe to just by date for everything and just pop it in the right place if it's not.
Right. Yeah. I want to make clear that, like, I know you... Actually, what was the specific wording that you wanted me to say?
The specific wording that you came up with.
Sure, okay.
That sounded very forced now.
Where did I... that's fair. Where is the comment? Is
it... In the Discord chat, if you scroll up in the window you're currently in.
Ah, right. Most of the experience has been good, but there have been a few sticking points. I think they've been more noticeable because most of it has been good, so the bad parts stand out. There's probably a better way to word it, but like I do think that's the case. The reason why I can talk about tiling, or the reason why I can talk about the way the edit mode works, or the reason why I can bring up this stutter issue, is because most of the rest of it is fine. I don't need to talk about the system settings. They work fine. I do have a problem with the fact that you have like a million different modules. No. I don't understand why K-Screen is a separate package. Like that doesn't make any sense to me. It should like be part of the... I don't understand why monitor configuration needs to be an extra package. But that's like Plasma having a million packages for doing things. Anyway.
Do you want to know?
Sure. Why?
Anyway, it's just coming out of one word, history.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. Or like, I know the about my system, whatever it's called.
The info center.
What's the?
That's also a separate package for.
About this system. About this system is like a separate package, which it just it makes sense that it's legacy. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, we should try and hide that from users. Maybe just because I mean, what we have on the Git side and what we provide to distributions doesn't have to be the same thing. So there's room for.
It wouldn't matter.
I mean, it's not something that most users see.
Right, because they use a distro that just installs everything. Yeah.
Yeah. But it is a situation that comes from just history of K-Screen is a separate package because it was a competitor to replace something that already existed.
So it starts
off in its own repo because that's how you write a competitive, aggressive fork. And then we're like, okay, that's clearly better. Get rid of the old code. No point moving it. There's always good stuff here. What's the point of moving it? It doesn't affect anything. And that's how we get a split.
Yeah, that's fair.
But it's not a justification for why it should be like that.
Right. But like the point before I got sidetracked again, the point I was getting at is like the core fundamentals of being a good desktop are there. Like I it's fine. Like
okay, I'm gonna play host.
Actually, sorry. One thing I will bring up is I don't like the up and down arrow for minimize and maximize. I don't know why those are the things that are used. It just seems weird to me. It doesn't matter. It's. I never minimize Windows anyway. So.
Favorite feature so far.
Favorite feature so far.
Nice being asked questions you weren't expecting, is it?
Favorite feature so far. If I'm actually being honest, the fact that your portals work properly for video capture.
Yeah,
because I've been having issues on Hyperland with portals crashing my entire desktop. That's a problem. But I open up OBS, all of the portal windows open. I click the thing, and it just works.
Well, yeah, that's how things should be.
Yeah, it's nice. I don't use it often because I don't really use Discord, but I do like having the expert and video bridge stuff there as well. That is really nice. Mm-hmm. On the one occasion every month I use it, it's nice to have there.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I think we have made an effort for your backwards compatibility. Mm-hmm. I mean, generally. And thinking about third-party applications as people we care about most. Mm-hmm. don't break user space and all.
I do like the quick tiling. I would like it more, obviously, if it interacted with the tiling editor. But like as a stopgap, I think it works just fine.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's definitely something we put in as a first step to build upon. So hopefully you'll be happier as time progresses.
Yeah, like as some like most things, like the most things I just don't have an opinion on because they just work fine. Like they don't work exceptionally, they don't work badly. They work exactly as I would expect. And that's what I would want from it.
Yeah, I mean, I do agree that people get excited over a desktop environment is something I find a bit weird. Like when people are like, oh, I can't wait for the next release. I can't sleep. I've been up for 2 days. Like, why? It's weird.
Well, what you would want...
It's something you should use rather than something to be excited about. But well, some people are, so...
It is nice for there to be like great positive feedback about things, but it's also nice where people just don't, like, they don't have anything to say about it. Like,
yeah,
people shouldn't have anything to say about your minimize or your maximize or like closing windows. Like, no, you shouldn't have an opinion on that. They should just do what they do.
Exactly.
Or like, actually, one thing I know that Nico doesn't like is I don't actually care for the floating panel. I disable the floating panel.
I'm sure he's going to be very upset.
Yeah, because he made it like a big deal in his channel when he got the floating stuff done.
Well, I mean, it's because he did it. I mean, everyone's proud of the stuff they did. So,
yeah,
you know,
sure.
It's cool, right?
Yeah, I've just always had my bar directly on the bottom of my screen. So for me, it's just like, yeah, it's neat.
Yeah.
It's neat, I guess, but it's just not my thing.
Right.
Actually, sorry. Yeah, I completely forgot about thing. Like the main thing I really cared about. Widgets. There are a lot of times where I just have my so I have my bar set to be it's hiding when like a window's on top of it, and then it shows when it's a window's not there, whatever that mode is called. So if I go into like full screen, my bar isn't always on my screen. I think that's really annoying when it's there. But I also like to have a clock visible, so I like to put like a clock widget on like another screen. And it's just nice. I can just put it there and it works.
Okay. Nice to hear, because I mean, widget sometimes does feel like a dated concept because it was cool and OS X had it.
Right.
And then they sort of faded away to be more minimalist. So that's cool. It's not just dead code.
Well, other window managers, like on a lot of the window managers, I would have a bar on every screen.
Yeah.
But I don't need a bar on every screen. So, like, the main reason I have a bar on every screen is because I want to have my, like, desktop switcher there. But I don't really use virtual desktops because I don't like the way they work on Plasma. So I don't really need a desktop switcher there. as we got onto that before.
Yes.
Because right now I would normally be a very heavy virtual desktop user. I use two right now. So look, maybe Plasma's actually fixed my bad habits. I don't know.
It's fixed your need for virtual desktop by providing intuitive ways.
It's less pleasant, but I guess so. You might be going on to something.
My podcast.
So, one thing I did want to ask you about, because I think it's weird they're doing it, but it makes sense. Kind of. Kubuntu, with 24.04, they are going to be shipping 5.27.
I mean, people said good things about 5.27. The fact that it's on the end of the cycle has solid benefits.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're trying to get that long-term support, that's cool. I mean, we are going to be doing security patches into 5.27 for anything that comes up. If there's anything major, we'll backport that. So, you know, it's not forgotten about.
Right.
So, that's great. I mean, it's good to have different distributions providing something different.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, what's the point of them? So, if providing something on 527's, you know, selling point of saying this is how we're going to differentiate ourselves by being this more consistent base that's not going to change over time,
mm-hmm.
there's an advantage to that. Not for everybody, but that's fine. And then when they get a Plasma 6, I mean, I said to you, don't use Plasma 6.0 because we have bad 0.0.
And then I did.
You just ignored me.
Yeah. I've got to get the views.
And
though.
Now look what's happened.
That's fair. You make a good point.
So yeah, I don't necessarily think that's a good thing or a bad thing. It's entirely up to them. And I think there's going to be a user base that caters for well.
Mm-hmm.
6 is in a good place moving forwards. And 6.0 is our starting point to then build on from. And that's something to bear in mind with all of this. It's my promo spiel pitch here. 6.0 is our launching point for what comes afterwards. And the gap between 5.0 and what happened after that was big. 6.0 is the better starting point. It's going to just improve from here.
I would assume the logic is they don't want to ship a 0.0 release. Yeah. They'd probably be shipping like 6.03 or something, but like I think right now, or maybe they'd be shipping like 6.01, because right now I think they're actually in their feature freeze.
It's difficult. Everyone has their feature freeze ahead of time, and you can't come up with a calendar that works for everybody.
So maybe they just want to avoid that, because obviously 24.10 is going to be... there's no way it's not going to be Plasma 6 by that point. But... Yeah,
so I mean, I think that's probably a perfectly solid choice.
Mm-hmm. I know there's like a release schedule for like the bug fix releases, but is there like a release date sort of plan for 6.1 or any sort of rough guideline?
4 months after 6.0.
Okay.
So 4 months, three times a year.
Mm-hmm. So
I can't do a maths on February plus 4, but it's that.
It's not February. It's March.
Yeah, but we released in February.
Oh, right. So, right, you mean, yeah, okay.
It maths is hard, right?
Yeah, no, it is. Yeah, that's... I'm stupid. It's fine. Yeah. So, I guess some people probably want to know, like, what's in the pipeline? If not for 6.1, maybe something in the future. Like, neat things that are being worked on that... at some point are probably going to be shipped.
Okay, I mean, I can give a more... I mean, talking more fundamentally, one of the really nice things that came in 6.0 is we've got this automatic crash reporting.
Mm.
So rather than things going to Bugzilla, where it wastes loads of time with people marking duplicates or whatever, things go to Sentry, a UI designed specifically for this, it automatically duplicates things, deduplicates, and you've got a dashboard just for this. And that's worked wonders. And I hope that will continue to do so, because in, I say crash reports, is also any asserts or any time go, this looks weird, I'll just bail out now. So that's going to be really cool. That's something that's going to start reaping benefits in 6.1 and 6.2 onwards, because then we'll have the worst feedback from that. So that's going to be really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that landed in 6.0, but I don't think it's necessarily understood yet. Quinn got a desktop cube, right? And it's a gimmicky feature, whatever, it's a cube. Right? But that doesn't work by just doing a perspective transform on a bunch of rendering. It's a full 3D renderer. And bear with me on this, right? Because this is exciting.
No, I can already think of some dumb things you can do with this. Yes, okay.
Oh, there's so many dumb things. I'm not, without writing a single line of C++ or anything. The problem Quinn had was we had this graphics library which was too slow for our fast painting, where you just got irregular windows and you're not doing an effect. But also, not very good for writing proper effects, because doing stuff by hand is difficult. I mean, writing text in OpenGL, and especially if you want to get a Vulkan layers as well, is really difficult. But writing text and even loading an image, that sort of thing. So we've we've gone through a split. There's now effectively two renderers in Quinn that interact and swap with each other over the same, being able to share information between each other very smoothly. Which meant we've got this very, very, very fast, simple renderer for your normal case. And that's faster than it was before. Much more streamlined, much more simplified. It's just, here's a bunch of squares, render them, can be super fast. It's what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And then when we bring in the effects, whatever they are, then we can leverage Qt Quick, which is an amazing 2D or 3D, you get to choose a framework where you can do anything you'd expect with Unity. I mean, not at the level of Unity, but drawing a cube and then putting a lighting effect in the shadows and textures and bump displacements, that sort of thing is trivial. And you're doing that in a high-level scripting language, in that memory-safe QML. So when we start to see people doing interesting things with that, it's going to start off gimmicky. It's going to start off stupid. It's going to start off with a cube, and it's probably someone's going to make a sphere, and someone's going to make a teapot where your windows morph or whatever. But with these sorts of frameworks, you see people do gimmicky things, and then desktop effects in general, it were gimmicky, and then people did really, really interesting stuff with them.
Mm-hmm.
And stuff that, if you now don't have them, if you don't have those smooth animations, things look awful. Yeah, you expect some of these things. So we're able to hopefully get the best of both worlds there. But high-level language for higher stuff, which is smooth and brilliant and great. Super. And then we've got a faster, simple thing for your common case, which is faster than before. And then when we throw in a Vulkan framework, which is underway, we only have to port to simple parts. And then the high-level language we get for free, because Qt Quick has done all of the work.
So what you're saying is you're waiting for someone to port Doom to it.
I guess it's doable. We'll see what happens.
You shouldn't do it, but if someone wants to.
So, I mean, I think that's something to be excited about. And QML in general, I mean, memory-safe languages are something people are talking about. And I mean, there is that go-to thing of rewrite everything in Rust is the only way to a memory-safe language.
I think most people don't even realize that a lot of modern languages are just memory-safe by default. Like,
it's, yeah. Like, I mean, Rust provides things which aren't... Rust provides things which aren't just memory safety.
Right, it's not.
But there are plenty of other memory-safe languages, and I mean, QML and JavaScript is one.
Mm-hmm.
And as we move more stuff to that, we're going to get this more stability and everything. And it's really providing a high, fast turnover for designers to just come in, not knowing any code and work on our UI, which really pays off because you don't want developers doing UI because they suck at it.
Yes, they do.
And so once we get some of that tooling and infrastructure in place to get these core components, which needs to be worked on,
mm-hmm.
Because right now we're being very conservative and making our stuff look like our old widget framework.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very slow, performance-wise, which is the thing I care about. But also it's holding us back quite a bit. So at some point that's going to get a new way of working, and we can leverage that, and it's going to be awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Also, most importantly, there is funding coming in from various sources. I'm allowed to say Valve funded a lot of bug fixing over 6.0 just last month.
Okay.
And they've got a specific feature they're funding. But there's also funding from other places. Another company wanted to do some 527 LTS support recently.
Mm-hmm.
We've got money in the KDEV to fund two people doing various projects. And that makes a difference. Because...
Mm-hmm.
More developers who have more time, you get more stuff done. It's not a complicated equation there, but it really pays off. And once you have a better product, hopefully that will bring in more as well. So there's a reason to be excited about Plasma 6.
I'm assuming Valve's probably in the process of deciding like when they want to move the Steam Deck over. Like that's probably why they're... like obviously they're trying to, you know, improve things generally as well, but that's going to be a big part of the reason why they're doing it.
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable. I mean, I've got plasma in a deck. At some point, that's going to switch.
Yeah, it's 527 right now, but at some point, presumably, unless they just abandon the device, it'll be plasma 6.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a specific question, something to take to Valve, but yes.
No, that's really cool. It seems like there's a lot of like really cool stuff like in the works, like in the pipeline. Not all of it's like user facing, like the bug reporting stuff. But for the developers, that is going to help dealing with the problems. I know that a lot of KDE people don't like to hear it, but like, you know, there are a lot of bugs to be resolved because like you can see like the change notes, there's a lot of bugs being resolved. And having that reporting coming in a more accessible way and more useful way that gets rid of all of the noise and collapses it down into, like, collapses the duplicates down into things that, like, you know, you don't have 500 reports of the exact same thing, is going to make it easy to search through things and hopefully more problems that are being being seen by a lot of people are able to be more easily, I guess, identified.
Prioritized.
Yeah, prioritized, yeah.
Better triaging of that sort of thing, so.
Right, right.
I think that's really encouraging. I think that's something, because, I mean, we've got a reputation there to shake off.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're making steps towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully our reputation will sort of, it takes a lot of effort to shake a reputation.
Right.
And that's something we need to put an effort into.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard plenty of times, like, from people, maybe they've no idea what they're talking about, saying it would be nice if Plasma stopped adding features and then focused on bug fixes for a year or two or whatever.
Yeah.
And like that
I mean, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah.
But
that perception is there for like for a reason, because you know, there were rough periods like Plasma 4, I guess with KDE4 back then. I think it was, when did the swap over to like calling the desktop Plasma come in?
It came slightly after 4.
Mm-hmm.
But it was in that phase, partly because of poor reception of the desktop and the applications wanting to not be tied together with it.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's going the other way, because in part of this perception is KDE is massive and we've got a lot of stuff. So should the reputation of Plasma be tied to a reputation of K Mahjong, Mahjong card game? Probably not, but if it's all under the same umbrella, people will make that association. I mean, if Apple made a bad calculator app, people would associate it all together. So
right, right.
So we are too big, mm-hmm. and we do need to sort of streamline of, this is what we consider core, this is what we consider to be, and to use GNOME's terms, that circle of GNOME, they've got that. Circle KDE, and I think we've lost that sort of, this is our core that we're focused on, this is the stuff with a secondary level.
Yeah, I think the GNOME Circle stuff is cool, because like it is there any sort of equivalent on the KDE side?
I mean, not, it's complicated to draw exact equivalents,
sure.
I mean,
yeah.
The greatest thing, or we have to apply over here and everything. We have tried, it's become a KDE policy of trying to be as open, welcoming various projects. So as soon as any project wants to be hosted, they can get hosting and they can become part of KDE app. And us providing hosting is one thing, but then that also gets associated with, you are KDE now. And then they get your branding with that. And not everything's at the same level. There's some applications which are amazing, which are bringing us up, and there's other things that bring us down. And so some more separation would be good to convey. So, but yeah, there is something in the sense of, there's loads of apps. And there are other people making apps, and they're somewhat targeting KDE as their environment.
Oh, I thought you had more to say there.
No.
Just a random side note. I kind of liked when the K in KDE stood for cool. I the cool desktop environment. That was a.
I mean, you can always just pretend it does. Like every time you see it.
That's fair. how I handle GTK, the GNOME toolkit.
GNOME tool cool.
Hmm?
GNOME tool cool.
GNOME tool cool. You know what? We can go with that one from now on. That'll work. What else did I have on here that we didn't talk about? Talked about Fedora already. We talked about that. I think we actually hit on everything I have here. I don't know how that happened. Actually, well, one thing I did want to talk about is, so a lot of people have been very critical of the way that I installed Plasma. Because I did not install the meta package, and I did this for a specific reason. So,
to be as annoying as possible.
Yes. Actually, not even wrong. Because, so, the KDE packaging guidelines, they suggest these are the packages that are recommended to install alongside Plasma or install as a meta package. I wanted to see what would happen if I just did not install the meta package. And what I've noticed is there is a lot of silent issues where certain things just don't do anything. There's like a button there, and like it'll work all fine with the meta package installed, but it doesn't like call you a moron because a package is missing.
There's some extra challenges in this because we have Plasma deployed on various embedded boards, or even in some cars, some prototype stuff there to have certain KDE stuff there. So you can't have a pop-up dialogue saying, I can't find a system tray, because that would be quite annoying if you're using Plasma as a base for whatever weird embedded device you're doing. Mm-hmm. So is it balance between you're on a desktop and you've forgotten something, and you're making a minified build and deliberately forgotten something? And
well, there's a
trying to separate.
One situation I saw, just as an example. So for some reason, this might be Arch being stupid with their package. They don't have, for KDE add-ons, for some reason, Qt Quick 3D is not a it's not like a hard dependency. So the Qt just doesn't work.
There's a problem with KDE Plasma add-ons being too many things.
Right.
And Qt Quick 3D being quite a big thing, they're like, well, maybe somebody only wants a comic applet.
Sure.
So, I think that's Arch's rationale. I know our metadata does list it as recommended. But Arch had that rationale. It's not the wrong rationale. It's not one that worked out. But hopefully it gets fixed over time, right?
Hopefully. But in cases, I understand that being an issue as well, where you just can't like randomly throw pop-ups, but I don't know. Like, in cases like that, it would be nice if there was some indication that something was missing, whether it be like in the desktop effects itself, being like, hey, you're missing this library at this location, or something.
Yeah. I mean, there definitely should be. In fact, something did land for the cube specifically, I think.
Okay.
I know something landed there. Because you weren't the only person.
I searched for the problem, and I had like a wall of Reddit posts come up and be like, install this package.
Yeah. Which, they're right. It's something that doesn't get seen, because any testing you do, you install it before. I grab myself a
If you're testing
install,
on Neon, it's yeah.
There, right? So, I mean, people did do some clean VM testing, but clean VM testing is not the same thing. So, so I told you not to install 6.0, but did you listen?
Well, if you didn't install 6.1, I would have installed Plasma Desktop, and then I would have the same problem.
Yeah, maybe.
But here's one of the other things with me complaining about stuff. People are like, oh, well, no, this is actually a good thing for you. People will complain about me complaining, but my argument for why it's a good thing, and I'm on Arch, so I'm going to get things like way before, you know, a especially Kubuntu, but even before Fedora. So by the time that Kubuntu is seeing it, the people on Kubuntu should be thanking the rolling release people that they are running the 0.0 release, and they are, because obviously you had all the beta testing, right? But
yeah,
a beta test is one thing. The real beta test is going to be when it's out to the public, and it's not just people that are hyperactive KDE, like developers and hyperactive KDE users, it's the general audience. That's when you're going to start seeing even more issues that no one even realized were there, because people have like weird setups, or like I have, for example, I have 3 monitors, but I have 2 vertical monitors. I don't know if there's specific issues with vertical monitors, but yeah, don't question my setup. But most people don't run vertical monitors. Maybe there's some issue with vertical monitors. I haven't found one, but like things like that.
We had a bug report today. Yesterday. Somebody with a setup, we've got 2 monitors and they touch in the corner. So like it's a one in here and the other diagonally placed next to it.
How do they move them? Can you move it through the corner?
Yes, and just go through that one corner.
Okay.
And then you posted it. It was like, okay, that's a weird bug. How did you end up? I deliberately set it up to that.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's what I mean. Like, people are going to have weird setups.
It wasn't even this bug. Like, apparently, it worked absolutely fine. It was just a bug or something unrelated.
But, like, that's... Or they have, like, weird hardware. Like, or they'll, you know, I don't know, they have, like, a... I don't know, how many people are, like, doing wireless printers, for example? I don't know, maybe a lot more people. I don't know how many people are... You're probably not going to see that until someone, like, uses Plasma, like, a business or university. Like, most people don't have printers. Yeah. So, I don't know, there could be some random printer issue or, like, I don't know, some weird, like, I know drawing tablets, for example. Like, there's a lot of artists have been, like, this was a big discussion with Fedora going Wayland only with Plasma. My understanding is a lot of things that are missing for tablets that are, like, very artist-specific things they would like to see added. And most people just are not going to test that because they just don't use it.
Yeah, I know some developers bought some tablets to hook everything up. But if you hook everything up in a tablet that I can afford, it has 2 buttons and a pointy stick thing.
Right, yeah.
I've the ones that other people, developers, have... API has a puck which can move, and then you've got this controller, and then that's got and more accesses of rotation than exist in the physical world.
Mm-hmm.
And then another device is on top, and the spec's insane. And the spec's insane is because the device is complicated and insane.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're right. I mean, there's stuff to fill in.
And I think the real problem with Plasma, and it's the problem and the benefit, is because there is so much customization and there are so many different ways it can be run, you're going to, like, run into situations where, like, a subset of settings just doesn't get used by anyone but one person.
Yes. Yes. We have a lot where there's a specific focus policy. The focus, the window under your mouse gets focused automatically. Mm. And nobody tests that.
Going back to the guy I mentioned before who runs Plasma at 1600% zoom, he had an issue with the, so he uses the push. So when you push the edge of the screen, it then moves around. Have you ever used the zoom desktop effect?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. He doesn't use the one that follows the mouse. He likes to push the edge of the screen. And there was an issue where, so he has offset monitors. So in his actual, like, layout, he offsets, like, in the in-case screen, he, like, offsets them. Because he wants them to line up in the real world. That's, like, his logic. And he doesn't have, like, an arm so he can level them up, so he offsets them in software as well. I don't remember the full logic behind it, but there was an issue, and he actually ended up implementing the fix himself and, like, working with the developer it. There was an issue where if... I think it was on the screen that was higher, you couldn't pan to the top of the screen. Oh, no, it was the screen that was lower. You couldn't pan to the top of the screen or the screen that was lower, so, like, header bars would be cut off.
That's weird.
Yeah, but, like, hardly anyone uses that, so he ended up getting that resolved, and, yeah, it things like that. Like, most people aren't going to mess around with it, so, you know, there's only so much, like, testing that can be done. Like, you're going to have like test paths that you're going to run internally, but you can't run a test for every single feature. There's just too many things.
Yeah. Even if you did, you'd still get bug reports.
Mm.
I mean, the best bug report I've ever had, this guy, and bug report was when he resumes from suspend, plasma shell closes, and he's got a backtrace, and the backtrace has nothing relevant in it. It's just idling. You know, it's like back and forth going through it. Four messages in, trying to get him some logs, whatever. And then he goes, I don't know if it's relevant, but I've got a script I have hooked up to systemd resume. Like, yeah, okay, what is it? And it's kill all dash segv plasma shell. I was like, this should have been mentioned somewhere near the beginning of this conversation, because yes, I think it is somewhat relevant.
Why does the script exist? Did he ever say that?
Pardon?
Did he ever say why that script existed?
No! It was like, there's no justification. It was like, I don't know if it's relevant, but... And failed to piece the two together. And then I was too irritated, so I don't know what he would have said afterwards. I mean, that was... Bugzilla, we've got two levels of close. You're closing, you can't reopen this button. And I went straight to that one because...
Like, oh, plasma shuts down my computer randomly. Have like an hour-long discussion. Oh, yeah, sometimes my cat likes to play with the power button. Like, maybe you should have mentioned that from the start. I don't know, it seems pretty important. I'm sure you've had plenty of just weird bug reports where you're just like, why? Like, this is not a bug. Like, this is, like, it, when it's, like, complete user error, like, there's no issue with Plasma whatsoever. It's entirely, like, it's not even, like, Plasma UX issues. It's, they've installed something where, like, I'm sure this has come up a lot where, especially with, like, UX stuff, where it's, like, they've got some crazy theme or they've got like some plasmoid installed and it changes some core functionality and they think there's an issue with plasma. In reality, it's entirely their own setup.
We definitely have many, many, many of people opening an NVIDIA X configuration tool which can move monitors about and then saying, my monitor's moved about. And that took a long time. Oh, and BleachBit. Hundreds of duplicates of this thing where it just deleted some fairly important files in the config folder because it didn't think it was necessary. I mean, that was quite a while ago. It must have been 10 years ago, actually, but I hold a grudge for a long time of duplicate. Still don't see where it's come from. We've written a file just here. How could it be gone?
Oh, God. It would be nice if everybody just had, like, they had clean backtraces, they had everything in order, they had, like, perfect replication conditions, but sadly, that's not reality.
No, so, the only solution is, rather than people running Plasma on their own machine, they can just SSH into here, and then, because it works on my machine.
Maybe that is the solution.
Cloud computing.
Exactly. We're coming up on the 2-hour mark, so I guess we'll end it there.
Yeah, sounds good.
I know you've got your blog that you occasionally chuck things up on, but is there anywhere you want to direct people to?
I can got a certain theme on the store I can recommend.
Yeah, Breeze Dark.
Oh, yeah. No, obviously planet.kde.org, get everyone's blogs. And I recommend people check out Brody Robertson's YouTube channel.
I was going to show myself anyway. It's fine. You do that for me. Yeah, planet.kde is cool. I love planet.kde. I don't go to it enough, but I should go to it more often.
I mean, all the good stuff gets picked up by bloggers anyway.
Oh yeah, you have like a one-line comment on Phoronix about it, and then like it would be like one comment is like of a giant essay, and you're like, okay, well, Thank you for at least linking it. I do appreciate that Phronix always links the source so I can go read it and just ignore the post.
It is frustrating when you get paraphrased and then people give commentary on that paraphrasing, which...
Yeah, that's why I always like to like show the full quote on screen. So if I do paraphrase it and someone wants to call me stupid for paraphrasing it, they have the source right there.
No, I like the way you do it. I mean, you tend to read verbatim and then provide feedback on... And your opinion can still be, I read David's blog and I think it's stupid. But it's better than I paraphrasing something
Yeah. Yeah. And I always have like a bunch of the links in the description as well, so people really want to check out the full source. Like, I usually end up like skipping paragraphs that I don't think are important. Like, there might be additional context. Or you might have explained something that I explained earlier in the video or something like that.
Yeah,
or
yeah.
Maybe I can say it in less words. Like, you might explain the global theme situation, for example. I think you had a description of like what happened, and had already said it earlier in the video or something like that. So like, okay, just skip that. Don't need to read it. We'll go to the next part. But anything else you want to direct people to? Or is that pretty much it?
Download Plasma at your nearest distribution.
Yes, it will be available on Fedora 40, whenever Fedora 40 comes out, I don't know. April? Maybe, I don't know. Something like that. Sounds right.
Yeah, I feel like I should know your stuff, but...
It'll be out soon. Go to the Fedora website, you'll find it out there.
Yeah.
And then I guess not Kubuntu because, yeah.
Hey, still got 5.27. Good release.
I think OpenSUSE has it. So I know Tumbleweed has it.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't know what their point releases are going to do. I don't know. And Manjaro has it because it's just Arch. I don't know. I don't know what else is out there. Debian will have it in like 4 years. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if that's pretty much it, I guess we'll just do my outro. That's pretty much it. Is there nothing else for you to say?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
I thought you were going to do your outro.
Thank
you for our wonderful sponsors, blah, 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 blah.
No,
and then
I'd
like to name
you. I don't actually have sponsors
you
on here. I should find some sponsors. Look, if anyone wants to sponsor me, hit me up. So I'm not going to read my email up because then the scrapers will scrape the text here and then they will... start sending me spam. But if you go to my channel, you'll find it. Anyway, the main channel is Brody Robertson. I do Linux videos there 6 days a week. By the time this comes out, I'm actually going to move this forward in my schedule because it's so it can be more relevant. Check out my April Fool's Day video when it comes out because I had very fun going very, very off the rails with that one. So enjoy that. I always upload them the day before April Fool's Australian time, so like I'll upload on like the first for me, which is not the first for the Americans, so it confuses them. They think it's serious for the first couple of minutes. It's always fun. I've got the gaming channel Brody on Games. I'm playing through God of War 2 still. I'll probably be done this week, and I'm gonna be finishing off New Other Worlds with you. And I don't know if you pop around after this goes live on Saturday, I might be streaming the new Path of Exile League, so pop around for that if you want. And if you're listening to the audio version of this, you can find the video version on YouTube at Tech Over T. And if you want to listen to the audio, you can find the audio on any audio podcast platform. There is also an RSS feed. Put it into your favorite app, and you'll be good to go. What do you want to say? How do you want to end us off?
Goodbye is a traditional way of ending things.
That works pretty well.
Okay.
See you guys later.
Goodbye. Oh, yeah, there's a hand wave. I'll throw that end as well.
Salute. Sure, that works.